As talks continue in Geneva, we'll continue to strengthen the moderate opposition. That was what President Barack Obama said while hosting France in a lavish ceremony in Washington, a stance that was also shared by France. Why does the U.S. continue to think that arming the opposition will lead to a positive outcome, never mind what they call the moderate opposition? In this edition of the debate, we'll discuss the prospects of the Geneva conference, which the Syrian delegation says the focus should be on terrorism, not the transitional governing body, and why the prospects of parallel talks between Russia, U.S., and international mediator Lakhdar Brahimi also look to lead nowhere.
Syria's peace talks once again hit an impasse. Representatives of the government and foreign-backed opposition have confirmed that they have been unable to push the negotiations ahead over the priority of top demands by the two sides. While the government delegation says fighting terrorism should be the first priority in the Geneva talks, the opposition insists that the formation of a transitional government and the resignation of President Bashar al-Assad must come first.
The Syrian delegation has confirmed once again that it respects the will and determination of the Syrian people to stop violence, to stop terrorism.
Today we presented our main document outlining the various steps and principles that need to guide the transitional process.
Russia, the U.S., as well as the U.N. Arab League envoy Lakhdar Brahimi have held separate talks over Syria, which many construe as a sign that the negotiations in Geneva have failed. Meanwhile, fierce fighting continues between the Syrian army and foreign-backed insurgents in the key region of Qalamun near the Lebanese border, with the army making more gains. The army has seized control of the strategic town of Al-Jarajir. The Syrian warplanes also pounded the town of Yabrud, the last insurgent's stronghold in the mountainous Qalamun region. Meanwhile, in Homs, relief operations have resumed to ease the ordeal of the people in a besieged area of the city. The aid deliveries and evacuations come just a day after they were suspended due to what was described as logistical problems. Hundreds of civilians have already been moved out of the city as part of a UN-brokered deal between Damascus and the militants. The U.S. and its Western allies have tried to take the issue of Homs to the UN Security Council. They are said to be seeking to circulate a draft resolution which would authorize the use of force against Syria if it fails to allow aid into Homs. Russia and China have said they will veto such a resolution. Meanwhile, the U.S. spy chief has called for military aid for insurgents. The U.S. National Intelligence Director, James Clapper, says more military training and equipment for the militants will boost them against Assad. Observers unanimously believe that Washington and its Western and regional allies have exerted all efforts to bring about regime change in Syria. But on the ground, the tide has long turned in favor of President Assad.
Let me introduce our guest for this edition of the debate. Journalist and political commentator Richard Millett joins us from London. We have author and historian Webster Griffin Tarpley joining us from Washington. Gentlemen, welcome. Richard Millett. The U.S. adamant in its arming of the opposition. Wait a minute, they call it the moderate ones. This insistence on arming this moderate opposition, does the U.S. really even know who they are, given the fact that they know there's a track record of some of these arms falling into the wrong hands?
Well, obviously, it's problematic as to who is moderate, as you have suggested. I think the latest idea is that the Islamic Front are the best hope of representing the future of Syria. And out of this Islamic Front, there is a possibility that there could be a leader who could present a more moderate view of the Syrian people as well as Islam. And I think that is obviously the hope, because there is no hope for Assad to continue in his role, or the regime as it is to continue in the current role. And there is no hope for ISIS or Al-Qaeda or their affiliates, Al-Nusra, or whatever you would like to use the term to describe as terrorists, to continue also with the possibility of running a future Syria. So, yeah, I mean, it's very problematic, but there is a search on at the moment for who can best represent a moderate force in Syria, and it's not Assad, and as you say, it's not the terrorists.
Well, when you answer that, Richard Millett, you weren't yourself 100% confident about how the U.S. has reached out to the latest, this Islamic Front, of which, by the way, they totally rejected that outright, saying we're not going to talk to the U.S. This lack of confidence perhaps is reflected in many respects by the intelligence community in the United States. So isn't that a dangerous game when time and again now the U.S. has come out and said we're going to arm the so-called moderate opposition?
Well, I mean, the role of America is not necessarily to arm. It's to sort of support, technically. I mean, the arms seem to be coming mainly from Saudi Arabia. And America, to all intents and purposes, has turned away from using force, as we've saw with the potential after the red line had been crossed of Assad using chemical weapons on his own people, and then the further reports of war crimes being shown that he had committed against his own people. Even then, there was no use of force, either directly by America or using that way suggested by you of supplying arms. So really, it is at the moment, the search is on, number one, to find a moderate in the opposition, and number two, to reach some sort of peace or ceasefire via these diplomatic negotiations.
Well, what's Griffin Tarpley, let's talk about this threat. It's been a repeated announcement now by the U.S., the threat of these foreign fighters. James Clapper came out and said it's 7,000 of them. Some estimates actually put it at 150,000 from some 50 countries. Even the number of countries is said to be higher, which includes Europe, with some American of some of these insurgents to be Americans tied to al-Qaeda, the al-Nusra Front in particular, aspiring to attack the United States. And we still have the U.S. saying they're going to arm the moderate opposition. This threat is a big deal, isn't it? We're seeing the reaction from the U.S. Why would it then come out and say again that they are going to keep arming the moderate opposition?
It's very surprising. We've just had the first certified British suicide bomber going into action, a tragic and wretched story for this person from Sussex and for his family. Yesterday here at the White House, we had the state dinner for the French President Hollande, and even though he's somewhat changeable in his affections, the warmonger role seems to be a permanent fixture of Hollande, and we had a rather dangerous combination with some warmonger toasts being made at this state dinner at the White House, a couple of hundred yards from where I'm sitting. So this has not been pacified. In other words, the threat of military action continues to be there. The war party here was, of course, checked back in September, October, thanks primarily to Putin and Lavrov, for whom the American people, I think, have reason to be grateful. But now there's been a kind of a gradual drumbeat, and it takes the following form. It's all around the humanitarian intervention, the so-called responsibility to protect, or R2P. And this focuses on the siege of Aleppo, where the terrorist rebels have been gradually driven back, and some places like the Yarmouk camp. And what goes on in these places, of course, is that the rebels are the ones who prevent humanitarian supplies from getting in the majority, certainly, of cases. It's the rebels. They have every interest to block the humanitarian aid deliveries. And then, of course, they turn around, and the U.S., the British, and the French have been working on this United Nations resolution since about 7 to 10 days ago, I would say, which focuses precisely on these humanitarian issues with then humanitarian corridors of some kind. Now, the Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov correctly has said that this is based on unreality. It is absolutely unacceptable. Russia and China will and certainly should veto this. The structure of the resolution has been If the aid is not delivered within 2 weeks, then the countries that want to can begin taking sanctions or maybe even military action against Syria. So this is a one-way ticket to war. I would just point out, historically in the 20th century, the person who really pushed forward the idea of responsibility to protect is, of course, Hitler. In the Czechoslovakian crisis of 1938, Hitler's position was responsibility to protect, in that case, Germans, Sudeten Germans inside Czechoslovakia. And in that period, the Sudetenland became the humanitarian corridor. So humanitarian corridor, when you see that word, just like no-fly zone, means acts of war. It means a general Middle East war, which nobody can want. So the perspective, of course, here is, when does it end? These imperialists seem to be